too. These circumstances proved pressing as a weight on the heart, tending to bear it down. Therefore he brought down their heart with labor. Psalm 107:12. They strike at the grain of the heart and cross the natural inclination, whence a trial arises, whether, when God lays on his mighty hand, the man can yield under it or not, and consequently, whether he is meet for heaven or not. 3. The heart is naturally apt to rise up against these humbling circumstances, and consequently against the mighty hand that brings and keeps them on. The man naturally bends his force to get off the weight, that he may get up his head, seeking more to please himself than to please his God. They cry out by reason of the arm of the mighty. But none saith, "Where is God, my Maker?" Job 35:9-10. This is the first gate the heart runs to in humbling circumstances, and in this way the unsubdued spirit holds on. 4. But what God requires is rather to labor to bring down the heart than to get up the head. James 4:10. Here lies the proof of one's meetness for heaven, and then is one in the way heavenward, when he is more concerned to get down his heart than to get up his head, to go calmly under his burden than to get it off, to bow under the mighty hand than to put it off him. 5. There must be a noticing of the hand of God in humbling circumstances. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it? Micah 6:9. There is an abjectness of spirit whereby some give up themselves to the will of others in the harshest treatment, merely to please them, without regard to the authority and command of God. This is real meanness of spirit, whereby one lies quietly to be trampled on by a fellow worm from its imaginary weight, and none so readily fall into it as the proud, as sometimes to serve their own turn. These are men pleasers. Ephesians 6:6 with Galatians 1:10. What are those humbling circumstances the mighty hand of God brings men into? Supposing here what was before taught concerning the crook in the lot being of God's making. These are circumstances, 1, of imperfection. God has placed all men in such circumstances, under a variety of wants and imperfections. Philippians 3:12. We can look nowhere where we are not beset with them. There is a heap of natural and moral imperfections about us. Our bodies and our souls, in all their faculties, are in a state of imperfection. The pride of all glory is stained, and it is a shame for us not to be humbled under such wants as attend us. It is like a beggar strutting in his rags. 2. Of inferiority in relations, whereby men are set in the lower place in relations and society, and made to depend on others. 1 Corinthians 7:24. God has, for a trial of men's submission to himself, subjected them to others, whom he has set over them, to discover what regard they will pay to his authority and commands at second hand. Dominion or superiority is a part of the divine image shining in them. 1 Corinthians 11:7. And therefore reverence of them, consisting in an awful regard to that ray of the divine image shining in them, is necessarily required. Ephesians 5:23, Hebrews 12:9. The same holds in all other relations and superiorities, namely, that they are so far in the place of God to their relatives. Psalm 82:6. And though the parties be worthless in themselves, that looses not from the debt due to them. Acts 23:4-5. Romans 13:7. The reason is, because it is not their qualities, but their character, which is the ground of that debt of reverence and subjection. And the trial God takes of us in that matter turns not on the point of the former, but of the latter. Now, God, having placed us in these circumstances of inferiority, all refractoriness, in all things not contrary to the command of God, is arising up against his mighty hand, Romans 13:2, because it is mediately upon us for that effect, though it is a man's hand that is immediately on us. 3. Of contradiction, tending directly to balk us of our will. This was a part of our Lord's state of humiliation, and the Apostle supposes it will be a part of ours too. Hebrews 12:3. There is a perfect harmony in heaven, no one to contradict another there, for they are in their state of retribution and exaltation. But we are here in our state of trial and humiliation, and therefore cannot miss contradiction, be we placed ever so high. Whether these contradictions be just or unjust, God tries men with them to humble them, to break them off from addiction to their own will, and to teach them resignation and self-denial. They are in their own nature humbling, and much the same to us as the breaking of a horse or a bullock is to them. And I believe there are many cases in which there can be no accounting for them, but by recurring to this use God has for them. 4. Of affliction, Proverbs 16:19. Prosperity puffs up sinners with pride, for it is very hard to keep a low spirit with a high and prosperous lot. But God, by affliction, calls men down from their heights to sit in the dust, plucks away their gay feathers wherein they prided themselves, rubs the paint and varnish from off the creature, whereby it appears more in its native deformity. There are various kinds of affliction, some more, some less humbling, but all of them are humbling. Wherefore, not to lower the spirit under the affliction is to attempt to rise up when God is casting and holding us down, and cannot fail if continued in to provoke the Lord to break us in pieces. Ezekiel 24:13. For the afflicting hand of God is mighty. 5. Of sin, as the punishment of sin. We may allude to that, Job 30:19. All the sin in the world is a punishment of Adam's first sin. Man threw himself into the mire at first, and now he is justly left weltering in it. Men willfully make one false step, and for that cause they are justly left to make another worse. And sin hangs about all, even the best. And this is overruled of God for our humiliation, that we may be ashamed and never open our mouth any more. Wherefore, not to be humbled under our sinfulness is to rise up against the mighty hand of God, and to justify all our sinful departing from him as lost to all sense of duty and void of shame. Humbling ourselves under God. What is it in humbling circumstances to humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God? This is the great thing to be aimed at in our humbling circumstances, and we may take it up in these 8 things. 1. Noticing God's mighty hand as employed in bringing about everything that concerns us, either in the way of efficacy or permission. And he said, "It is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good." 1 Samuel 3:18. And the king said, "The Lord hath said unto him, Curse David. Who shall then say, Wherefore hast thou done so?" 2 Samuel 16:10. He is the fountain of all perfection, but we must trace our imperfections to His sovereign will. It is He that has posted everyone in their relations by His providence. Without Him, we could not meet with such contradictions. For the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as the rivers of water. He turneth it whithersoever He will. Proverbs 21:1. He sends afflictions and justly punishes one sin with another. Isaiah 6:10. 2. A sense of our own worthlessness and nothingness before Him. Psalm 144:3. Looking to the infinite majesty of the mighty hand dealing with us, we should say with Abraham, "Behold, I am but dust and ashes." Genesis 18:27. And say amen to the cry, Isaiah 40:6. All flesh is grass, etc. The keeping up of thoughts of our own excellence under the pressure of God's mighty hand is the very thing that swells the heart in pride, causing it to rise up against it. And it is the letting of all such thoughts of ourselves fall before the eyes of His glory that is the humbling required. 3. A sense of our guilt and filthiness. Romans 3:10, Isaiah 64:6. The mighty hand does not press us down, but as sinners, it is meet, then, that under it we see our sinfulness, our guilt whereby we shall appear criminals justly, caused to suffer, our filthiness whereupon we may be brought to loathe ourselves, and then we shall think nothing lays us lower than we well deserve. It is the overlooking our sinfulness that suffers the proud heart to swell. 4. A silent submission under the hand of God. His sovereignty challenges this of us. "Nay, but, O man, who art thou that repliest against God?" Romans 9:20. And nothing but unsubdued pride of spirit can allow us to answer again under His sovereign hand. A view of His sovereignty humbled and awed the psalmist into submission with a profound silence. "I was dumb, I opened not my mouth, because thou didst it." Psalm 39:9. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Job 1:21. And Job 40:4-5. What shall I answer thee? I will lay mine hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will proceed no farther. And Eli, it is the Lord. Let him do what seemeth him good. 1 Samuel 3:18. 5. A magnifying of His mercies towards us in the midst of all His proceedings against us. Psalm 144:3. Has He laid us low? If we be duly humbled, we shall wonder He has laid us no lower. Ezra 9:13. For however low the humble are laid, they will see that they are not yet so low as their sins deserve. Lamentations 3:22. 6. A holy and silent admiration of the ways and counsels of God, as to us unsearchable. Romans 11:33. Pride of heart thinks nothing too high for the man, and so arraigns before its tribunal the divine proceedings, pretends to see through them, censures freely, and condemns. But humiliation of spirit disposes a man to think awfully and honorably of those mysteries of providence he is not able to see through. 7. A forgetting and laying aside before the Lord all our dignity, whereby we excel others. Revelation 4:10. Pride feeds itself on the man's real or imaginary personal excellence and dignity, and being so inured to it before others, cannot forget it before God. Luke 18:11. God, I thank Thee that I am not as other men. But humiliation of spirit makes it all to vanish before Him, as does the shadow before the shining sun, and it lays the man in his own eyes lower than any. Surely I am more brutish than any man, and have not the understanding of a man. Proverbs 30:2. 8. A submitting readily to the meanest offices requisite or agreeable to our circumstances. Pride at every turn finds something that is below the man to condescend or stoop to, measuring by his own mind and will, not by the circumstances in which God has placed him. But humility measures by the circumstances one is placed in and readily falls in with what they require. Hereof our Savior gave us an example to be imitated. Philippians 2:8. Being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, ye ought also to wash one another's feet. John 13:14. Use. Application of exhortation. Let the bent of your heart, then, in all your humbling circumstances, be towards the humbling of your spirit, as under the mighty hand of God. This lies in two things. One, carefully notice all your humbling circumstances and overlook none of them. Observe your imperfections, inferiority in relations, contradictions you meet with, your afflictions, uncertainty of all things about you, and your sinfulness. Look through them carefully and consider the steps of the conduct of Providence toward you in these, that you may know yourselves and may not be strangers at home, blind to your own real state and case. 2. Observe what these circumstances require of you as suitable to them. Bend your endeavor towards it to bring your spirits into that temper of humiliation, that as your lot is really low in all these respects, so your spirits may be low too, as under the mighty hand of God. Let this be your great aim through your whole life and your exercise every day. Motive. 1. God is certainly at work to humble one and all of us, however high any are lifted up in this world. Providence has hung certain badges for humiliation on them, whether they will notice them or not. Isaiah 40:6. Now it is our duty to fall in with the design of Providence, that while God is humbling us, we may be humbling ourselves, and that we may not receive humbling dispensations in vain. 2. The humiliation of our spirit will not take effect without our own agency therein. While God is working on us that way, we must work together with Him, for He works on us as rational agents, who being moved, move themselves. Philippians 2:12-13. God by His providence may force down our lot and condition without us, but the Spirit must come down voluntarily and of choice, or not at all. Therefore, strike in with humbling Providence in humbling yourselves, as mariners spread out the sails when the wind begins to blow, that they may go away before it. 3. If you do not, you resist the mighty hand of God. Acts 7:51. Ye resist insofar as you do not yield, but stand as a rock, keeping your ground against your Maker in humbling Providence. Thou hast stricken them, but they have not grieved. Thou hast consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than a rock. They have refused to return. Jeremiah 5:3. Much more when you work against Him to force up your condition, which you may see God means to hold down. And of this resistance consider the sinfulness. What an evil thing it is. It is a direct fighting against God, a shaking off of subjection to our sovereign Lord, and a rising in rebellion against Him. Isaiah 45:9. The folly of it. How unequal is the match. How can the struggle end well? Job 9:4. What else can possibly be the issue of the potsherds of the earth dashing against the rock of ages, but that they are broken to pieces? All men must certainly bow or break under the mighty hand of God. Job 41:8. A season for humbling ourselves. 4. This is the time of humiliation, even the time of this life. Everything is beautiful in its season, and the bringing down of the Spirit now is beautiful, as in the time thereof, even as the plowing and the sowing of the ground is in the spring. Consider, humiliation of spirit is in the sight of God of great price. 1 Peter 3:4. As He has a special aversion to pride of heart, He has a special liking of humility. Chapter 5:5. The humbling of sinners and bringing them down from their heights, wherein the corruption of their nature has set them, is the great end of His word and of His providence. It is no easy thing to humble men's spirits. It is not a little that will do it. It is a work that is not soon done. There is need of a digging deep for a thorough humiliation in the work of conversion. Luke 6:48. Many a stroke must be given at the root of the tree of the natural pride of heart before it falls. Oftentimes it seems to be fallen, and yet it arises again. And even when the root stroke is given in believers, the rod of pride buds again, so that there is still occasion for new, humbling work. The whole time of this life is appointed for humiliation. This was signified by the 40 years the Israelites had in the wilderness, Deuteronomy 8:2. It was so to Christ, and therefore it must be so to men, Hebrews 12:2. And in that time, they must either be formed according to His image, or else appear as reprobate silver that will not take it on by any means, Romans 8:29. So that whatever lifting up men may now and then get in this life, the habitual course of it will still be humbling. There is no humbling after this, Revelation 22:11. If the pride of the heart is not brought down in this life, it will never be. No kindly humiliation is to be expected in the other life. There the proud will be broken in pieces, but not softened. Their lot and condition will be brought to the lowest pass, but the pride of their spirits will still remain, whence they will be in eternal agonies through the opposition betwixt their spirit and lot. Revelation 16:21. Wherefore, beware lest you sit out your time of humiliation. Humbled we must be, or we are gone forever. And this is the time, the only time of it. Therefore make your hay while the sun shines. Strike in with humbling providence, and fight not against them while you have them. Acts 13:41. The season of grace will not last. If you sleep in seed time, you will beg in harvest. 5. This is the way to turn humbling circumstances to a good account, so that instead of being losers, you would be gainers by them. Psalm 119:71. It is good for me that I have been afflicted. Would you gather grapes of these thorns and thistles, set yourselves to get your spirits humbled by them? Humiliation of spirit is the most valuable thing in itself. Proverbs 16:32. It cannot be bought too dear. Whatever one is made to suffer, if his spirit is thereby duly brought down, he has what is well worth bearing all the hardship for. 1 Peter 3:4. Humility of spirit brings many advantages along with it. It is a fruitful bough, well laden wherever it is. It contributes to one's ease under the cross. Matthew 11:30. Lamentations 3:27-29. It is a sacrifice particularly acceptable to God. Psalm 51:17. The eye of God is particularly on such for good. To this man will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word. Isaiah 66:2. Yea, he dwells with them. Isaiah 57:15. And it carries a line of wisdom through one's whole conduct. With the lowly is wisdom. Proverbs 11:2-6. Consider it a mighty hand that is at work with us, the hand of the mighty God. Let us then bend our spirits towards a compliance with it, and not wrestle against it. Consider. We must fall under it, since the design of it is to bring us down. We cannot stand before it, for it cannot miscarry in its designs. Isaiah 46:10. My counsel shall stand. So fall before it we must, either in the way of duty or judgment. Thine arrows are sharp in the heart of the king's enemies, whereby the people fall under thee. Psalm 45:5. They that are so wise as to fall in humiliation under the mighty hand, be they ever so low, the same hand will raise them up again. James 4:10. In a word, be the proud ever so high, God will bring them down. Be the humble ever so low, God will raise them up. Chapter 5. Directions for reaching this humiliation. General directions. 1. Fix it in your heart to seek some spiritual improvement of the conduct of providence towards you. Micah 6:9. Till once your heart get a set that way, your humiliation is not to be expected. Hosea 14:9. But nothing is more reasonable, if we would act either like men or Christians, than to aim at turning what is so grievous to the flesh unto the profit of the Spirit, that if we are losers on one hand, we may be gainers on another. 2. Settle the matter of your eternal salvation in the first place by betaking yourself to Christ and taking God for your God in Him according to the gospel offer. Hosea 2:19, Hebrews 8:10. Let your humbling circumstances move you to this, that while the creature dries up, you may go to the fountain. For it is impossible to reach due humiliation under His mighty hand without faith in Him as your God and friend. Hebrews 11:6. 1 John 4:19. 3. Use the means of soul humbling in the faith of the promise. Psalm 28:7. Moses, smiting the rock in faith of the promise, made water gush out, which otherwise would not at all have appeared. Let us do likewise in dealing with our rocky hearts. They must be laid on the soft bed of the gospel and struck there, as Joel 2:13. Turn unto the Lord your God, for He is gracious and merciful, or they will never kindly break or fall in humiliation. Particular directions. 1. Assure yourselves that there are no circumstances that you are not in so humbling, but you may get your heart acceptably brought down to them. 1 Corinthians 10:13. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. This is truth. 2 Corinthians 12:9. My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. And you should be persuaded of it with application to yourselves if ever you would reach the end. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Philippians 4:13. God allows you to be persuaded of it, whatever is your weakness and the difficulty of the task. For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and he that thresheth in hope should be partakers of his hope. 1 Corinthians 9:10. And the belief thereof is a piece of the life of faith. 2 Timothy 2:1. If you have no hope of success, your endeavors, as they will be heartless, so they will be vain. Wherefore lift up the hands which hang down, and the feeble knees. Hebrews 12:12. 2. Whatever hand is or is not, in your humbling circumstances, do you take God for your party and consider yourselves therein as under his mighty hand? Micah 6:9. Men in their humbling circumstances overlook God, so they find not themselves called to humility under them. They fix their eyes on the creature instrument, and instead of humility, their hearts rise. But take him for your party, that ye may remember the battle and do no more. Job 41:8. 3. Be much in the thoughts of God's infinite greatness. Consider his holiness and majesty to awe you into the deepest humiliations. Isaiah 6:3-5. Job met with many humbling providences in his case, but he was never sufficiently humbled under them till the Lord made a new discovery of himself unto him in his infinite majesty and greatness. He kept his ground against his friends and stood to his points till the Lord took that method with him. It was begun with thunder, Job 37:1-2. Then followed God's voice out of the whirlwind, chapter 38:1. Whereon Job is brought down, chapter 40:4-5. It is renewed till he is farther humbled, chapter 42:5-6. Wherefore I abhor myself, and repent in dust and ashes. 4. Inure yourselves silently to admit mysteries in the conduct of providence towards you, which you are not able to comprehend, but will adore. Romans 11:33. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God! How unsearchable are his judgments, and his ways past finding out. That was the first word God said to Job 38:2. Who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? It went to his heart, stuck with him, and he comes over it again. Chapter 42:3. As that which particularly brought him to his knees, to the dust. Even in those steps of providence, which we seem to see far into, we may well allow there are some mysteries beyond what we see. And in those which are perplexing and puzzling, sovereignty should silence us. His infinite wisdom should satisfy, though we cannot see. 5. Be much in the thoughts of your own sinfulness. Job 40:4. Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay mine hand upon my mouth. It is overlooking of that which gives us so much ado with humbling circumstances. While the eyes are held that they cannot see sin, the heart rises against them. But when they are opened, it falls. Wherefore, whenever God is dealing with you in humbling dispensations, turn your eyes upon that occasion, on the sinfulness of your nature, heart, and life, and that will help forward your humiliation. 6. Settle it in your heart that there is need of all the humbling circumstances you are put in. This is truth. 1 Peter 1:6. Though now for a season, if need be, ye are in heaviness through manifold temptations. God brings no needless trials upon us, afflicts none, but as their need requires. Lamentation 3:33. For he doth not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men. That is an observable difference betwixt our earthly and our heavenly Father's correction. Hebrews 12:10. They after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Look to the temper of your own heart and nature, how apt to be lifted up, to forget God, to be carried away with the vanities of the world. What foolishness is bound up in your heart? Thus you will see the need of humbling circumstances for ballast, and of the rod for the fool's back. And if at any time you cannot see that need, believe it on the ground of God's infinite wisdom. That does nothing in vain. 7. Believe a kind design of providence in them towards you. God calls us to this as the key that opens the heart under them. Revelation 3:19. Satan suggests suspicions to the contrary as the bar which may hold it shut. This evil is of the Lord. What should I wait for the Lord any longer? 2 Kings 6:33. As long as the suspicion of an ill design in them against us reigns, the creature will, like the worm at the man's feet, put itself in the best posture of defense it can, and harden itself in sorrow. But the faith of a kind design will cause it to open out itself in humility before him. Case. Illustration. Oh, if I knew there were a kind design in it, I would willingly bear it, although there were more of it. But I fear a ruining design of providence against me therein. Answer. Now what word of God or discovery from heaven have you to ground these fears upon? None at all, but from hell. 1 Corinthians 10:13. What think you the design towards you in the gospel is? Can you believe no kind of design in all the words of grace there heaped up? What is that, I pray, but black unbelief in its hue of hell, flying in the face of the truth of God and making him a liar? Isaiah 55:1, 1 John 5:10-11. The gospel is a breathing of love and goodwill to the world of mankind, sinners. Titus 2:11, Titus 3:3-4, 1 John 4:14, John 3:17. But you believe it not. In that case, more than devils believe it. If you can believe a kind of design there, you must believe it in your humbling circumstances too. For the design of providence cannot be contrary to the design of the gospel, but contrarywise. The latter is to help forward to the other. 8. Think with yourselves that this life is the time of trial for heaven. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. James 1:12. And therefore, there should be a welcoming of humbling circumstances in that view. Verse 2. Count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations. If there is an honorable office or beneficial employment to be bestowed, then strive to be taken on trial for it, in hope they may be thereupon legally admitted to it. Now God takes trial of men for heaven by humbling circumstances, as the whole Bible teaches, and shall man be so very slow to stoop to them? The future glory of the believer. I would ask you, is it nothing to you to stand a candidate for glory to be put on trial for heaven? Is there not an honor in it, an honor that all the saints have had? Behold, we count them happy which endure. James 5:11. And a fair prospect in it. For our light affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. 2 Corinthians 4:17. Do but put the case that God should overlook you as one whom it is needless ever to try on that head, that he should order you your portion in this life with full ease as one that is to get no more of him. What would that be? What a vast disproportion is there between your trials and the future glory. Your most humbling circumstances, how light are they in comparison of the weight of it. The longest continuance of them is but for a moment compared with that eternal weight. Alas, there is much unbelief at the root of all our uneasiness under our humbling circumstances. Had we a clearer view of the other world, we should not make so much of either the smiles or frowns of this. What do you think of coming off foul in the trial of your humbling circumstances? The lead is consumed of the fire, the founder melteth in vain, for the wicked are not plucked away. Reprobate silver shall men call them, because the Lord hath rejected them. Jeremiah 6:29-30. That the issue of it be only that your heart appear of such a temper as by no means to be humbled, and that therefore you must and shall be taken off them while yet no humbling appears. I think the awfulness of the dispensation is such as might set us to our knees to deprecate the lifting us up from our humbling circumstances ere our hearts are humbled. Isaiah 1:5, Ezekiel 24:13. 9. Think with yourselves how by humbling circumstances the Lord prepares us for heaven, giving thanks unto the Father, which hath made us meet to be partakers of the inheritance of the saints in light. Colossians 1:12, 2 Corinthians 5:5. The stones and timber are laid down, turned over, and hewed, ere they be set up in the building, and not set up just as they come out of the quarry and wood. Were they capable of a choice, such of them as would refuse the iron tool would be refused a place in the building. Pray, how do you think you are made meet for heaven? By the warm sunshine of this world's ease and getting all your will here? No, sir, that would put your mouth out of taste for the joys of the other world. Vessels of dishonor are fitted for destruction that way, but vessels of honor for glory by humbling circumstances. I would say here, will nothing please you but two heavens, one here and another hereafter? God has secured one heaven for the saints, one place where they shall get all their will, wish, and desire, where there shall be no weight on them to hold them down, and that is in the other world. But you must have it both here and there, or you cannot digest it. Why do you not quarrel, too, that there are not two summers in one year, 2 days in the 24 hours? The order of the one heaven is as firm as that of the years and days, and you cannot reverse it. Therefore, choose you whether you will take your night or your day first, your winter or your summer, your heaven here or hereafter. 2. Without being humbled, with humbling circumstances in this life, ye are not capable of heaven. Now he that hath wrought us for the self-same thing is God. 2 Corinthians 5:5. You may indeed lie at ease here in a bed of sloth and dream of heaven, big with hopes of a fool's paradise, wishing to cast yourselves just out of Delilah's lap into Abraham's bosom.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."